Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back into Sports Time. Bryant Landon with you for this final hour on this Monday afternoon. We've got to talk some NBA, some Grizzlies, and we do that on Mondays with the Michael Cole. Michael Cole joins us from the Commercial Appeal where he's the Grizzlies beat writer. We've also got to talk some NBA. DeMichael, thanks so much for joining us. A lot to get to, a lot of NBA to discuss, but you had a story that was published earlier today over at the Commercial Appeal for Grizzlies offseason predictions, including Ja Morant's future. So tell me, DeMichael, what are some of your predictions that will happen over the next couple of months of the offseason?
What's going on, guys? But yeah, you know, I think Ja is kind of the one that everyone, of course, will focus on in that. But I mean, that's kind of the obvious, right? Predicted a Ja Morant trade, and predicted the Grizzlies draft a point guard in the draft. And the other thing was noteworthy to me is when I was writing it and when I was kind of putting together the predictions was one of my other predictions was that Ja Morant wouldn't be the only Grizzlies player that would be traded. There will be more. And if you just look at the roster right now at surface level, you got 15 guys, you know, on standard contracts. So it's a math equation. You know, the Grizzlies aren't approaching this season with any free agents on the 15-man roster. Ryan Rupert was on a two-way deal. He'll be a free agent, but and Taj Gibson has an option. So, you know, they have some you know, possibilities there. You know, you got Gigi Jackson on a team option as well. But, you know, I strongly believe that's going to be picked up. But I think given the context of you're talking about 14 players under contract, and even if you take Ja Morant out of that, now you have 13 players under contract. You're probably taking a player, and there is no probably. There's a good chance you're taking a player back in a deal for Ja Morant. So, he's not going to be the only one who's going to be moved because right now you have three picks in the first round. I mean, three picks in the top 32, excuse me, two in the first round. And you're going to need to create some room for them.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And is you know, like you said, the Ja Morant situation is kind of blocking out the sun right now because everybody wants to know what ultimately happens with him. But I think you're right. There are some other guys on this roster that we could see get dealt. Another thing that you pointed out in this story, and you've written about it a couple times now, of that Cedric Coward is going to play in Summer League for the Grizzlies. So I'm curious, what do you think will be kind of the message to him going into Summer League? We've seen in the past with a lot of teams in the NBA, but certainly with the Grizzlies, of it feels like a lot of times with these, you know, high draft picks or guys that they have you know, drafted, that they send them, especially in their second Summer League, and it's almost like they have a couple of things that focus on this. We're going to put you in these situations. I know, you know, Dez, his second Summer League, he was a lot more on ball. What do you think it will be for Cedric Coward this Summer League?
Yeah, I think that's it right there. It's going to be, you know, kind of that on ball, you know, kind of giving him, you know, more leeway, more freedom offensively to grow into a bigger role. I think that's exactly what you're going to see. If you watch him play, it's clearly the next step in his, you know, evolution, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the spot-up shooting and the 3-and-D ability, I think we all see that. You're talking about a guy averaged over 13 points over six boards. So that is there. But taking that next level as a playmaker will make him even more impactful. And I think, you know, just being comfortable, and he's talked about it, you know, tightening his handle up, being comfortable playing in those tight comeback spaces will be good for him because in order for him to reach his quote-unquote ceiling and even improve from the player that we're seeing, he's going to have to be able to do some of those things.
Mm-hmm. We learned on Friday. Friday was the deadline for players to declare for the draft or opt back into to college if they wanted to. Obviously, players had the opportunity to declare for the draft while keeping their eligibility at the college level. But we're about 2 weeks away from the draft lottery, where we'll know where that first Grizzlies pick lands at. Were there any surprises to you or any decisions that you think would play a factor into the Grizzlies' way of thinking in the first round based on what we saw last week from the college guys?
Any factors? What I'll say is, at this point, we know that the Grizzlies have an idea of what they want and how they want to kind of reshape their roster going forward, and part of that is, you know, being bigger, being faster, being stronger. I think I've used the example in the past of, you know, the model. And the model in the last couple years has been the Boston Celtics and the Oklahoma City Thunder. And if you look at those teams, you don't see a guy in the starting lineup where teams can say, okay, that's the weak point. That's the guy that we can attack every single possession. And if you go back to those Grizzlies playoff series, whether it was the Lakers, whether it was the Warriors years ago, but in those series, the Warriors found mismatches. The Lakers constantly putting, you know, Ja Morant, you know, and Luke Kennard when he was on the floor early in that series, and guys like that in those, you know, pick and rolls and trying to get them to guard LeBron James and things like that. So you're trying to put yourself in a situation where you have as close to as many positive defenders across the board, which usually means more size. So I think that's going to be a priority, you know, going into this draft.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I don't know if we've asked you this before or not, but do you have a prospect or a couple prospects that you kind of say, if that guy's on the board when the Grizzlies are picking, that's my pick? It feels like a lot of people are kind of in the corner of, hey, just give me one of those top guards and I'll feel really good about it. But do you land on any particular player, or is it kind of just, hey, whoever's best available at that spot, go and take that guy?
Man, I got two that I feel really good about. And, I mean, it's really more than two, but to answer the question, like, if you draft top one, top two, Darren Peterson is my guy. And I know, you know, AJ, you know, got the buzz later in the season, is all the questions with the injuries and stuff. But if everything checks out, you know, we get here to Chicago in a couple weeks or whatever, and they say, oh, Darren Peterson's hamstring is fine. I'm saying, okay, thank you. No further questions. That's all I need to know. Because the two-way ability is special. Like, the scoring, the shot-making, we see that.
Yeah.
But what separates him from AJ, because AJ's big, strong, he's going to get to the league and just be physically gifted very early on. But the separator is Darren Peterson has another level defensively. And that means something to me when you're talking about guys on the wing. And so he's kind of that 1A type of guy. For me. And with that being said, I think the other guy, you know, when you talk about that second tier, Darius Acuff is a guy for me. Now, I know what I said at the top of the show about the Grizzlies and size and whatnot, but you asked me my guy. And the thing about it is, Darius Acuff, I feel like, you know, from the standpoint of, you know, be a galvanizing player for the fan base, you know, he'll have that little flash to him. Fans will kind of he'll grow on fans pretty quickly. He can shoot the ball at a really high level. He's a really good playmaker. He's had the ball in his hands a lot. Of course, the size isn't preferable, but I'm still of the opinion that if you put the right things around that type of size, you can still win. I know I said what the Grizzlies feel like. Me and the Grizzlies may not be aligned, you know, in those things, right? And I know that size is important to the Grizzlies as they go forward and whatnot. And it's important to me, too. But I look at it like this. If you get a guy like Darius Acuff, who is going to be a terrific offensive player, you got to make sure that you optimize him by putting those plus wing defenders out there, putting that rim protector out there. And the Grizzlies have a guy in Zach Edey. I'm sure they're going to draft a guy at the four who can be, you know, a plus defender. You have Cedric Cowart, who projects as a plus defender over his career. And we'll see whether it be Jalen Wells, whether it be another guy, there's plus defender potential in that other wing spot. So if you do that, you supplant that guy at point guard, Darius Acuff, with those type of players, I'm cool with it, because offensively he's going to run the show.
Yeah, DeMichael, you are you kind of laid it out perfectly there when you were saying that the Grizzlies have those two picks in the first two of the first 32 picks in the NBA draft coming up here, and I think they have a really good opportunity to address two of the biggest problems. One of them being that point guard that's probably going to be vacant here soon. So there's a lot of names there. With that second pick, they have a really good opportunity to address that big man situation of having that big guy to back up Zach Edey, because we know he can't play on the court, you know, every single minute of the game, though we would like him to. Is there any bigs coming out of this NBA draft that you think the Grizzlies should be looking at, or ones that you're favorable towards?
Yeah, so they got three picks in the top 32, and you got the pick that's going to be somewhere in the top 10. You got number 16, and you got number 32. So based on, you know, how things are laid out right now in terms of the players that should be available and what range, I believe that 32 is the ideal spot to get your center from a value standpoint and from, just what makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, at 16, you're either going to be reaching or you're going to be hoping, you know, that certain guys fall there. I like a wing, you know, at 16. I think you can add another wing into that combination of, you know, Jalen Wells, Gigi Jackson, and throw that other wing in there and say, hey, whichever one of you guys is the best is going to be the one who plays alongside of Cedric Coward. And I think that's how you maximize that pick. So 32 is the pick for me. I like Tarz Reed out of UConn. Mm. I think where I am with the big thing is not only is it insurance in case of a Zach Edey injury, it's insurance from the standpoint of one thing that the Grizzlies have struggled at, even going back to Jonas Valanciunas, whether it's Jonas Valanciunas, whether it's Steven Adams, whether it's Zach Edey, is when those guys leave the floor, the Grizzlies are often undersized, or even when they have comparable size out there, like a Jaren Jackson Jr., he's not a very good rebounder. So their rebounding numbers have, you know, often gone down when those guys leave the floor. So you need another big who's physically imposing, who can kind of fill that role. Reed is a guy that jumps out to me, you know, from UConn. To a lesser degree, he isn't as physically imposing, but I like the skill set of Henry Vassar, you know, out of North Carolina. He's a guy who's going to stay in the draft, and I think that's one of the guys, while some of these other players have taken their names out of the draft, he's one of the guys that's looked at it as, hey, I was probably going to be drafted in the 40s, but I have a chance to get drafted higher. He can shoot the ball really well. He's not the most physical, which kind of goes against the thinking here, but he's a 7-footer. And I think he could be a solid, you know, offensive backup to a guy, you know, like Zach Edey. So it depends on kind of what you prefer. Like with Reed, I think you get another big who's going to be physically imposing. Talk about 6'10", 250-plus pound guys, going to set some hard screens, average 2 blocks a game. So those are two bigs that jump out to me, both a little different because Vassar is a little bit more finesse, three-point shooting, can score around the basket against mismatches and whatnot. But Reed does a lot of his work around the rim.
Well, you read my mind because I was just going to ask you about two guys in the draft that it feels like there are some questions about, Reed being one of those guys. But I would love if the Grizzlies took him with that third pick. I think that would be a home run of a pick. The other one, though, is a guy that will be taken in the lottery. It's Keaton Wagler. There's some questions about, you know, his athleticism. Will he be able to be as productive at the next level in the NBA against NBA defenders? What do you make of Keaton Wagler? And at his size, with his length, do you think he projects more as a one or a two at the NBA level?
Well, he's a combo guard, mm-hmm. and I think it really doesn't matter as much as it used to, guys. Like, it's like, okay, you watch Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, he's technically playing point guard, mm-hmm. but I don't think we're thinking Chris Paul, Steve Nash when we're watching Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Like, if you watch Anthony Edwards, we call him a shooting guard, but if you watch the Timberwolves run their offense, Anthony Edwards is often bringing the ball up the floor. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, DiVincenzo off of the ball. And it's, you know, Jaden McDaniels, sometimes Julius Randle will run some actions or whatnot. But the point that I'm making is everything is so interchangeable in today's league. Like, we technically classify Shai as a point guard and technically classify Anthony Edwards as a shooting guard, but they do a lot of the same things within their respective systems. So, You know, it's an interchangeable thing. Mm-hmm. As long as he can play out of the pick and roll and can read defenses, he'll be fine. And that is something that he's shown the ability to do at the collegiate level. I think the athleticism questions, you know, are valid. Like, it was one of my things very early in the season when people were, you know, kind of getting aboard the hype train. I'm like, I have questions because the NBA is an athlete's league. Mm-hmm. Like Europe, you go over there, you know, to Europe, you're going to see a skilled league, right? When you see Real Madrid play, when you see Barcelona, those are skilled teams. Footwork matters so much over there. When you get to the NBA, it's about playing in transition. Mm-hmm. You know, catching alley-oops, being able to defend 1 through 5, and not everyone can do it, but those are the guys who stand out when you're talking about targets to the draft. So he's not your prototypical guy from that standpoint, but guess what? Neither was Tyrese Haliburton. Mm-hmm. Neither was Luka Doncic. Like, there are anomalies in terms of guys who pretty much don't dunk the basketball, but they still, are very high-level skilled players. So I like Wagler. I do think there's some risk there. I think the shooting definitely translates. But I'm okay with him as kind of like that combo guard. I think you can play him on the ball if that's where we're getting at. But you got to be in a situation where you have other guys who can kind of take the pressure off of him too. And I think that's kind of what the Grizzlies want to do.
Yeah. Talking to Michael Cole, he joins us on Mondays to talk the Grizzlies and the NBA. You can find his work over at the Commercial Appeal. Switching gears a little bit to the NBA playoffs, you mentioned Anthony Edwards and DiVincenzo, both those guys leaving Saturday's game with injuries for Dante DiVincenzo and Achilles, Anthony Edwards a knee. But Minnesota does lead this series 3-1. What do you make of this series, and what do you think happens over these next couple of games when you're missing two pretty big factors for Minnesota?
Yeah, man, it's interesting because it's a 3-1 series, and it's two ways to look at it. And one of those ways is, yeah, you lose Anthony Edwards and DiVincenzo, but Minnesota has been winning this series because of its defense, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And they're going to have Ayo Dosunmu is going to step into there. The defense is still going to be really good with him. I'm sure guys like Mike Conley are probably going to play a little bit more. But I don't expect the defense to just fall off a cliff, right? Mm-hmm. As long as you got Jaden McDaniels, Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert's been playing a lot of minutes. They might even throw Naz Reid in there and go big. Like, we've seen them do the Julius Randle, Naz Reid, Rudy Gobert lineups together sometimes. So it'll be interesting to see how they play that. But defensively, they're going to have the ability to stay in the games. It's just going to be about, can they close them? Can you close a game when you don't have one of the best clutch scorers from the league this season in Anthony Edwards? And it's a valid question. It is a concern. And I'm a little worried for Minnesota because I know they're going to be in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me, you know, a lot of those games that the Grizzlies used to play against the top-level teams when Ja would be out. If you remember from 2022, 2023, those years, we'd always talk about how good the Grizzlies are, when Ja was out, right? They had this really good record. But the one area that they struggled was fourth quarters. They struggled in fourth quarters. Well, they used to blow a lot of those things out, but they struggled in the close games of the fourth quarters. And especially if you go to that playoff series, I vividly remember when they played Golden State in the playoffs and Ja missed those last couple games. Both were really close going into the fourth quarter, within a couple possessions, if I remember correctly. But each time Golden State had its closers and was able to pull away, whereas the Grizzlies didn't have theirs, and it kind of gives me a similar feeling with this Minnesota-Denver series. I mean, I would love to see Minnesota pull it out because you don't want to see Anthony Edwards come back. Sucks they're not going to have DiVincenzo, but, I mean, AO's been so good for them. Like, you can moderately feel that void. Like, I feel like that's going to be a big factor for them. And, either way it goes, I think both of those teams would present a very good challenge for San Antonio. So, I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah,
DeMichael, on the other side of that with Denver, kind of they came out on top in that first game and then have since kind of just trailed. And I think a lot of that was due to the fact of what McDaniels on the Timberwolves kind of calling out the whole entirety of the Denver team, saying they don't really play defense and whatnot. And it's kind of been evident to this point. I guess my question is simple. Is Jokic just trying to do too much in this series? Because it looks like he's exhausted. It looks like he's running down. Is he trying to do too much, or is just they're not that good good enough of a supporting cast around him to for the Nuggets to even mount to come back here?
Well, number one is the Timberwolves are winning the mental game. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the beginning. When you get in the series, the mental part of it is really important. And you know, you see a lot of these teams win. They're able to win the mental game. Even OKC last season. OKC didn't win the mental game from being annoying, from being pissed. Or even Boston the year before that. They didn't win the mental game from being annoying, pissed. They won the mental games because think about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. How many times have you seen him lose his cool? Think about Jason Tatum. Mm-hmm. How many times have you seen him lose his cool? It's rare.
Yeah.
It's rare. So it's like when they play those teams, you know, that try to get into your head, and they just stay even keeled, and they just do their work. And I know when people talk about Kawhi, you know, guys say, man, it's hard to talk trash to him because, like, he just doesn't respond to you. Like, he doesn't even entertain it and whatnot. But Minnesota has managed to win the mental game. You know, they're in the head of Jokic. They got him. I mean, there was a chance that he could have got suspended,
mm-hmm.
you know, just because of the fact that they're winning the mental game. You know, Jay McDaniels got that layup like it was within the rules. He can do that. But if Denver reacts, he benefits. So, you know, they're winning the mental game there. But from a skill standpoint, I think what it comes down to is, Jokic is facing the Jokic stopper right now, it feels like. I mean, Rudy Gobert has won 4 Defensive Player of the Year awards, and he's still kind of been disrespected in a way, but he's earning, you know, the respect that he's kind of deserved over the course of his career because of the way that he's defended Jokic. But Jokic, again, he's a multi-time MVP, the finals MVP. He's one of the best players, you know, of all time, you know, at this point. He's got to find an answer. Mm-hmm. He's got to find a way to respond. And if he does that, you know, if he says, okay, I can't get the ball in this spot against Rudy Gobert. I need to get the ball more in this spot. I need to try to get switches to this guy or that guy. If he's able to find the counter to the Rudy Gobert defense, then that puts Denver in a very good spot.
Mm-hmm. Last thing for you over in the Eastern Conference, your thoughts on this Magic Pistons series and then Raptors-Cavs?
Man, so Magic Pistons, I want to start there because from when this series started, talent, there wasn't a gap.
Mm-mm.
There's no gap between the Magic and the Pistons from a talent standpoint. And that's why, you know, at the beginning of the season, we were talking about the Magic as being a top three, top four team in the Eastern Conference. What's held the Magic back is, number one, you know, there's questions about the coaching there.
Mm-hmm.
And number two has been the fact that all these guys that are playing right now haven't played much together this season. You know, early in the season, Franz Wagner got hurt. Then Paolo got hurt. And Paolo, I mean, it was opposite. Paolo got hurt, then Franz Wagner got hurt. Then Wagner was about to come back. Then he got hurt again. And then, you know, like Jalen Suggs was in and out of the lineup early in the season. And then I believe late in the season, the sixth man, you know, got hurt, Anthony Black. So it's like they haven't had that continuity that they need in year one of this new-look team, even though Desmond Bane has played pretty much every single game for them. So that's been a big problem for them. They match up well from a size and skill standpoint. I think it's really going to come down to the closing minutes. They have Cade Cunningham, Detroit does, and that probably could be the difference in this series because I trust him more than Orlando's closest. And then the other series, I think that's a dog fight over there between Cleveland and Toronto. But I do think Toronto's won these two games and they played well, but Toronto's missing Emmanuel quickly. I think they win this series if they had Emmanuel quickly, but I still got Cleveland coming out in that one.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun watching these NBA playoffs. It feels like most of them have been really, really competitive through, you know, however many games they're through now. But, DeMichael, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you again next Monday.
All right, take care, guys.
Thanks, DeMichael. Michael Cole joining us from the Commercial Appeal. Make sure you go check out all his work. He is, even though it's the offseason for the Grizzlies, he is still pumping out content. So make sure you go and read his work over at the Commercial Appeal. Well, we need to get to a break because when we come back, we have to talk. Memphis has gotten another commitment since we started this segment, started this hour. This one, a shooting guard. So we will discuss that and more. A lot of news around college basketball. basketball. We'll get back into that 5-for-5 rule that sounds like the NCAA is about to implement for all sports in college athletics. So a lot to get to. We'll do all of that next during What's Trending.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
On Sports 56 and 98.5 FM, here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
Welcome back in Sports Time. Bryant Landon with you as we've got about 30 minutes left in today's show. We've got to talk about what's trending, and right now what's trending is Tiger basketball. Earlier today we started the show talking about the addition of point guard Jaden Reed, who committed earlier in the afternoon from Northwestern, started his career at South Florida, then went to Northwestern where he spent a season, now in the transfer portal again, has landed at Memphis. But just within the last 30 minutes or so, last 20 minutes or so, it is being reported that SEMO transfer Luke Almodovar has committed to Memphis. Is a guy that last season with Southeast Missouri State averaged 14.1 points per game and made an average of 2 3-pointers per game. This is a really intriguing guy. He started at the NAIA level. So he's from somewhere in Indiana. Signs out of high school to an NAIA program, spends 2 years at the NAIA level, where he's one of the best shooters at the NAIA levels.
Like, I like hearing that.
Both seasons, over 40%. And I think well over 40% from three. And then transfers to SEMO last year and kind of struggles to shoot the three ball. Now, I did say average 2 3-pointers a game. He was chucking last year. Like, they full green light to take as many threes as you want at
SEMO. Might as well.
SEMO.
Why not?
And so he took a lot of them and only shot – let's see. I'm pulling it up right now. Only shot 31.6 last year. But that 31.6 came on more than 6 3-pointers per game. So you make – a third of those of six, you know, you're a little over 2 3-pointers per game. So 2 3-pointers made per game last season, but shot 31%. The season before that was at St. Francis of Indiana, where he was first team all conference, averaged 20 points per game in 30 starts during the 2024-25 campaign. Led the Cougars in 3-pointers made, shot 49.7% from the field, and made 41.4% of his 3-point attempts. The year before that, shot 41.3% from three. So around that 41% both seasons at the NAI level, went up to the D1 level, I'm assuming probably took more threes, less percentage, but still averaged about 2 per game. But the other thing about him, this guy is super athletic. He is dunking on people, can attack the rim. So this is a guy that can give you some versatility where he can, you know, take and make the three, can also be a threat at the rim. You know, I don't think is as great in the mid-range level, so I don't think he would be kind of that true three-level scorer, but is pretty close and I think can bring you a lot. I don't know where he'll fall in terms of when this roster is complete. You know, will he be a bench guy? Will he be a starter? I believe he was a starter at SEMO. Only started 23 games. So I would assume this is a guy that will probably come off the bench for the Tigers. But, you know, a guy, again, averaged nearly 15 points a game last year, about 4 rebounds per game last year. So can give you a little bit of rebounding, can give you some scoring. But all in all, Memphis has added 2 guys today that takes them now to 10 guys on the roster and now 5 spots available. We know still waiting on word from Tylik Weeks, still waiting on word from Cornelius Williams and Josh Holloway on campus today and tomorrow. We'll wait to see ultimately what he decides as he is going to – it sounds like the top three are Memphis, Missouri, and West Virginia. Those are the 3 schools that he has taken visits to. So, I mean – you land one of those three, you're looking at 11 guys, about 4 spots remaining. I don't know what Penny Hardaway is going to want to do in terms of Does he want to use all 15 spots? Does he want to leave a spot available and go into the season with 14 guys? It feels like we're starting to kind of figure out what this roster is going to look like for Memphis basketball.
Yeah, looks like it little by little, and everything that you said sounds great. I love hearing that he was a great shooter at the lower levels, and then getting his shot kind of to do free range at SEMO. I think, to your point, probably going to be a dude that does come off the bench, which is not a bad thing, because Sincere Parker came off the bench, and he was one of the biggest scorers for the Tigers last year. So definitely not like a downgrade or anything like that from him. But yeah, slowly but surely, it seems like this roster is being put together. So I'm curious to see kind of how it goes, and if I'm Penny, I would like to utilize as many guys as I can to see because you can really only go up from what you had last year. So I think putting in these pieces little by little, you're making steps in the right direction.
Yeah.
And I think our biggest takeaway, we've said it on multiple occasions, was the fact that you needed shooters. And so the fact that these guys have a history of being good shooters, I think, is a really good sign.
It does feel like one of the priorities for Penny Hardaway and his staff this offseason was, we might not be a team next year that makes a ton of threes. Like, we might not be the most successful three-point shooting team in the country, but we need to go out after what was last season where you didn't really have any shooters on the team.
Yeah.
We need to go out and identify guys that can come in, and we know that they have a history of being able to take and make threes, and it feels like pretty much everybody that they've brought in so far might not be the best three-point shooters. You know, I know a lot of people have talked about Jerry Dang, who I think was around a 31% three-point shooter, but, you know, took a decent amount of threes. You know, all the guys that they've brought in, it seems like, have taken a decent amount of threes and kind of have that three-point shooting ability. The two other things about Luke Almodover before we switch gears, one thing that's really hard about the transfer portal is everybody focuses on offense because it's the easiest thing to find in terms of stats. I know what they're doing with points. I know what they're doing with assists. I know what shooting percentages. I can find all of that on the internet. It's a lot harder to find defensive stats, especially if a guy's not getting a bunch of steals or blocking a lot of shots. It can be pretty hard to analyze these guys as defensive players. So two numbers that I look at when it comes to defense: defensive win shares per 40 minutes and defensive RAPM. He's a positive in both of those. Now, it's a slight positive in both of those, but he is a positive on the defensive end. And another thing, at SEMO, in the OVC, was used a ton. His usage rate, 25.1%. That's in the 85th percentile of college basketball. So he was used a ton, and he didn't turn the ball over a lot. He averaged one turnover per game last season. So this is a guy that's not turning it over a ton, even though he's being used a lot in the offense, which I think is a good sign for Memphis.
That's a really good sign.
And so, you know, I think, like we said about the three-point shooting, it really feels like things that – if I had to say, here are the three things that it feels like based on what we've seen from the guys that they've brought in that Memphis's coaching staff has focused on: players that can shoot the three ball, players that don't turn the ball over a ton, and players that don't foul a lot. A lot of these guys that they've brought in, they're not, and especially the guys that they brought on visits, Cornelius Williams, Tyler Weeks, those guys really don't foul much. And that's another thing you can kind of add to the defense. Can you defend without fouling? Well, you look at those three things: shot making, three-point shot making, to be specific, low turnovers, and low fouls. What were the three biggest issues for the Tigers last season?
Well, number one was universally known as the fouls.
That's right. The other two?
What you just named.
Turnovers and three-point shooting. So it looks like they...
Well, shooting in general.
Sure, but... three-point shooting was all the shooting, but it felt like people were more frustrated about the three-point shooting. So it really feels like they saw those three as the big issues, and, you know, they kind of said, we need to address those things going into next season. So, again, Luke Almodover, the latest Tiger to commit, now brings them to 10 players committed for next season. That leaves 5 spots available. Still a couple guys. Don't know, if this will be the last commitment of the day. We're still waiting on word from Tyler Weeks and Cornelius Williams. Both those guys were on visits last week, and then Josh Holloway on a visit right now. I don't know if Luke Almadover ever visited Memphis. I never heard anything about him being on campus.
I didn't hear anything.
So this seems like a guy that maybe didn't get on a visit, but just felt like this was a good spot for him, and now will be with the Tigers. Wanted to talk more about the 5-for-5 rule that it looks like is going to be implemented in college athletics. The rule that is being pushed by the NCAA is that starting this upcoming season, players have 5 years of eligibility to play 5 seasons. And so it starts either at the year of your 19th birthday or the year after you graduate high school, whichever comes first. And basically, giving more flexibility and kind of the idea of less lawyers being involved. Of, hey, we have this, of you have 5 years to play 5 seasons. It's not the standard 4 and then you can get a medical red shirt,
right,
or you did a red shirt here and whatever. We don't have to worry about any of that. It's a blanket 5-for-5 rule. But, and we were talking about it with David Cobb, because, and the issue was last week, and we talked about it, of a couple of coaches making comments about it, originally it sounded like, okay, they're going to implement this as soon as possible. What does that mean for the players that just wrapped up their eligibility? Does that automatically give them another year where they can come back and play? And so it felt like, and I think you could see it over the weekend, especially with college basketball and the transfer portal, it felt like a lot of coaches were stopping. Because let's put everything on hold. We need more information about this, and then we'll continue to fill the roster based on whatever happens. The news today, it sounds like, once this is implemented, whenever that point is, it will not be retroactive, so guys who just wrapped up their senior season out of eligibility, they will not be granted a fifth year of eligibility. But David pointed out that's going to open up the floodgates for lawyers to immediately come in and say, well, why does my client not get an additional year? He only played 4 seasons. He deserves an extra year. What's going on here? So I think in the long term it's a good idea, but it could make things a little bumpy the rest of this offseason into next year, where I think you'll see a lot of lawyers involved and a lot of guys trying to get that fifth season of eligibility.
Yeah, I think it's a step in the right direction, to your point, especially because of just how many times I know that I have, complained about where college athletics is with the transfer portal, how crazy it is, how many times people are doing this, how many appeals are being made. So I think it is a step in the right direction. But to your point, I think it's just going to be a rocky start. Mm-hmm. I think there are going to be a lot of people who are upset with this, who are going to sit there and say, well, I just, spent a great deal of my offseason trying to get an appeal just to come back one more year, and now all of a sudden we have this new rule that says I could have just done it anyway. So I think it is going to be pretty bumpy, but I think once the dust settles, kind of after this year, I think this year initially is going to be bad, but then after that, I think everything should smooth out, and then that should be a good rule that's implemented.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that everybody could agree on is something had to happen.
Something.
There needed to be some sort of clarity.
You couldn't just let this go off scot-free forever.
I mean, the amount of players, and I've noticed it more kind of over the last month or two following Memphis and what they're doing in the transfer portal, the amount of players that enter the transfer portal, one of two things. Either they enter the transfer portal and you go to kind of like look at their player profile and it says they're a senior. And now you're trying to figure out, you're going to bios and trying to figure out, okay, they're listed as a senior. Do they have an extra year of eligibility? What's going on here? Either that happens and you just have no idea what's going on with this guy. Or the amount of reports I've seen where it's, Landon Schmidt enters the transfer portal, will need a waiver for eligibility next season.
Yeah.
And she's like, guys are just throwing flyers out there. Let me just enter the transfer portal. Hopefully I can get a waiver. We'll just do something to make sure I get a waiver, or I'll take the NCAA to court and I'll win because everybody wins.
Yeah.
And I'll play another season of eligibility. So we needed something that could say, hey, look, this is the blanket. This is the umbrella. You get 5 years, you play 5 years. But I do think it's going to be a little rocky to start things out. But we'll see how it goes. Hopefully it's not as bad as we think it will be. The last thing that I wanted to bring up, Arkansas basketball. They landed a commitment earlier today, a 5-star guy who I am super intrigued with, Mika Murinen. Have you ever heard his name before today.
I know he's foreign.
So it's a crazy story. I think I learned about him a year and a half ago, 2 years ago maybe, and it was my brother Connor that showed him to me. And he was like, this guy, you got to watch this guy. This guy is incredible. So he's foreign. He's Finnish. But both of his parents played college basketball, and I'm pretty sure he grew up here, at least played high school basketball in the United States, played at two different prep schools. It didn't work out there. Mm-hmm. He wanted better competition, whatever. So he goes back over to Europe and plays in the EuroLeague, which is by far the best league over in Europe. He doesn't play much, but he's playing in this organization where he's at practice, he's at games with pros. I mean, 30-year-old guys, 20-year-old guys, he's getting after it every single day with them, and said, I'm going to go over there and play because I have to, you know, I'm not eligible yet to go to college. I'm going to play a season there, and then I will go to college and play a season, and then hopefully go to the NBA. Well, when he went over to Europe, I mean, everybody kind of forgot about him because he's over in Europe and doing his thing over there. And so now he's committed. He's still a five-star. He's committed to Arkansas. And this is a guy, everything you've heard about him is the talent's there. It's just kind of he's maybe a little immature. He's got some growing up to do. And so I think being in the John Calipari system could be a good thing for him.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I'm really intrigued with how that looks for him and for Arkansas because it's going to be a pretty weak NBA draft next year.
Hmm.
And I think he has an opportunity of a guy that has played overseas, has been around professionals for a year, now is going to play SEC college basketball. This could be a guy that could really shoot up the draft boards if he can, you know, put it together next year at Arkansas. And the Grizzlies will have a first-round pick next year. Two first round picks, and so we'll see. Maybe if he's around at the top or close to the top, and the Grizzlies are around there as they continue to rebuild, maybe we're talking about Mika Murinen being a future Grizzly.
Hey, you know how I feel about 7 foot tall people who are foreign.
You love them,
love them.
And this guy,
they're great basketball players.
He's like a guard. He's like a wing. Like he kind of plays.
It's got Santi Aldama vibes.
He definitely does. So I'll be interested in him. But Arkansas is putting together a really nice team next year.
Currently the highest rated recruiting class right now.
Is that right? Wow.
They've signed the 5-star.
So. 3 5-stars.
Yeah, 3 5-stars. So I would assume so.
I would assume so. They've got Jordan Smith Jr., who's the number 2 overall player in the class, 5-star. J.J. Andrews, who's the number 12 overall in his class. Now Mika Murinen, who I believe is number 16. He's a 5-star. And then Abdou Toure, who is the number 26th overall player. He is a 4-star. They brought in a pair of guys that averaged 14 or more points at previous schools last year through the transfer portal. They're going to bring some guys back. But that's the thing about, and I was seeing it, the Kentucky message board was going crazy today. I dipped in there to see, and they said, well, of course John Calipari gets a great, puts together a great team. It's what happens at the end of the season when he can't put it together and win tournament games. So we'll see what that team, but on paper, it looks like a very talented
really
team. It absolutely does. Well, we need to wrap up today's show, get to a final break, and when we return, we'll wrap up today's show with Moe's Crunch Time.
Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Available locally on your radio dial as well as around the world online at sports56whbq.com. Take us with you everywhere by downloading the Sports 56 app. And at home, just say, Alexa, play Sports 56. Wherever you are, it's easy to stay tuned to Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Sports Time on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Here once again are Brett Norsworthy and Bryant Dacus.
This is pretty cool, and we're just getting started.
Spanning the globe.
Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
This game has always been called the world's greatest cocktail party. Do you know what is going to happen here tonight?
This is for all the biggest crunch time.
You are looking live. In your life have you seen anything like that?
Crunch time between the hedges.
The ball game is over, and Memphis has its first win in 16 tries. Its first win ever against its fierce in-state rival, Tennessee.
Goodbye!
It's obviously crunch time. Danny Wolf, Danny Wolf, Danny Wolf,
Danny Wolf, Danny Wolf, Danny Wolf. Hammer, nail, coffin, this baby is over.
Crunch Time is brought to you by Moe's Southwest Grill. Need a crunchy bite to eat? Head to Moe's for nachos, crunch wraps, tacos, salads, and more. Moe's.com, it's your go-to for all your taco crunch time emergencies. Well, what I learned today is that Memphis has added two players to the basketball team, both out of the transfer portal. Earlier, it was Jaden Reed, the point guard from Northwestern, who they added, feels like a really nice playmaker, facilitator to add to this roster. And then within the last hour, Luke Almodover from Southeast Missouri State. He's the new addition, more of a two-guard kind of wing option that can shoot the three, can also attack the rim. So I think two nice additions for the Tigers.
Yeah, what I learned a lot over this weekend in the NFL draft, and that was that the Eagles selected a guy who had never played football before, in Uar Bernard. Yeah. And so we got a guy who has never played football before, a Heisman finalist who's drafted or invited to a rookie minicamp.
How about that? Well, what I could have done without, we talked about it a lot today, but the story from Brendan Sorsby, who is taking an absence. He's entering a residential treatment program for his gambling addiction after it was released that he has gambled thousands of dollars on sports, including college football, including on his team when he was at Indiana. Look, I know we were talking about it with David, that all these players should be going into these classes to tell them what you can and can't do. Every college athlete knows that you cannot bet on your team, no matter if you're on the field or not. Ridiculous that he's even in this situation. But, you know, if there is an issue, if he does have a gambling addiction, hopefully he can find his help. But I don't know what this means for Texas Tech.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Quickly, what I could have done with that was also something that happened this weekend. I guess just prank calling during the NFL draft is one of the hugest things that continues to happen. It happened last year with Shedeur Sanders and Kenyon Sadiq this year during the draft. Thought he was getting prank called when he was getting called by the New York Jets. It took him talking to the head coach to realize this was not a prank call and that he was actually getting drafted to the Jets. So I don't know how people are getting a hold of these numbers, but it's kind of wild.
Yeah, that is wild. Where are you beaming tonight?
Beam me to Pittsburgh. It's Penguins and Flyers. If the Penguins lose this game, they're out quick in this Stanley Cup playoffs. So we'll just see.
Yeah, going to be a big one. Beam me, Timberwolves and Nuggets. We'll see what this Minnesota team looks like without two starters. But tonight, it is a lot of action. You've got some hockey. You've got three games in the NBA and Major League Baseball. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.